This is tape 3 of the interview with John Bollinger.
There's what's happening is sort of an amalgamation of all of the ideas into a system plan. Now, one would say, gee, isn't that good? Because now we're more of a system. And my point is, a system is not really something that's created by a whole lot of equal things. Okay? The components of a system are not equal. The components of a system, if you look at the system from a technological point of view, a system is a combination of entities, all necessarily different, each having unique functions, taken as a whole are more effective, okay, and operate as a unit, each component having its own unique function. That's what a system is to an engineer. The view of the academic system by system administration seems to be that all these campuses should be more alike.
Yeah.
And to me, that propagates duplication by the very nature of the way you approach the system. And it's doing just exactly the opposite of what they say they want to do. And I don't understand it. Philosophically, I think they're going in completely the wrong direction.
Have you talked to Shaw? Have you said
yeah,
this to
well,
him?
Well, I don't know if I'm quite as emphatic with Shaw as I am with your tape recorder. But I wouldn't hesitate to. I've said sort of these things to him before.
Mm. Yeah. And what does he say?
And Donna is here for 3 months, and she's starting to say the same things. At the meeting, at the last evening, she came up with that exact analysis, but I sort of planted that idea in her head a couple of weeks ago. But she has drawn that conclusion. And it's as clear as it can be. There's been no forceful management of the system in terms of, let's close this campus over here. We don't need that. Look at the enrollments dropping off. Let's say we've got this many dollars. We want to have these disciplines to support the business and cultural aspects of Wisconsin. And we're going to do these things this way, and we're going to do these things this way. There's none of that going on that I can see. At least the perspective that you get from sitting in a dean's level in this campus is that it will be harder and harder for us to meet our true mission of research, teaching, and public service in the future because of this leveling process. I guess time will tell whether we're right or wrong.
Do you think the present head of the Board of Regents is responsible for any of this, Weinstein?
Now, I won't even say on tape what I think. I don't think that there's real leadership on the Regents. I don't think the Regents should be. In my mind, the Regents is like a board of directors. And if you look at the definition of boards of directors and what their relationship is to a managed organization, the regents shouldn't manage the organization. They should decide the policy and the strategy and support it and promote it. They shouldn't micromanage the institution any more than the legislature should micromanage it. There's an enormous amount of micromanagement going on, both from the legislature and from the regents. And that's a lack of, that's, in my mind, that's a result of a lack of leadership, not a demonstration of leadership.
Mm.
Take, for example, what they did on the new positions. It's totally, it seems to me that it's totally against being productive. What they did is they said, you can have a new position, but you must show that you increase the number of sections that you teach if you get a new position. And they put that ratio up to where if I didn't have another way to show new sections, I couldn't hire a new assistant professor, because when I hire an assistant professor in engineering, I have to have that person only teach one course a semester for the first 2 years. That's the only way that young person has an opportunity to build his research program for those first 2 years. We're basically subsidizing those young people. But if I don't do that, I won't hire anybody, because Illinois is doing that, Northwestern is doing that, and Cornell is doing that. So all my competitors can say the first year or two, you will only teach one course a semester while you get your research established. And I expect them to be productive and bring in contracts and, you know, get going. They end up supporting themselves if they're successful at TEAS. But what the legislature did was tie positions, not to performance, offer new programs, offer more courses and so on. They tied it to just sections. For 4 years, I have been going the opposite direction. We have been using technology in our classroom. We've been investing a lot in videotaping and computers so that we could have bigger classes and fewer sections and do it effectively, okay? Mm-hmm. And we monitor that effectiveness with teaching evaluations. Everybody's required to use them. We're convinced in some of the new ways we teach that we're more effective than our forefathers ever were. We have a much more dynamic class, we have a better lectured class, and we have more successful students. And yet now I've got to go back, and in order that I can hire people, I've got to go and break those new programs up into multiple sections. Now I can do it so it shows up okay and gets counted right and doesn't hurt us by just changing the structure of the timetable. In other words, their management tool is so ineffective that it drives the wrong way in the first place, and it's so ineffective that I can get around it by cheating.
Yeah.
By manipulating, rather, not cheating, by manipulating, and that kind of micromanagement is nonsense in my mind. Let the campus manage, set objectives for the deans, you know, give them priorities to work on and make them put their program together. But when you sit up there in a legislature and try to turn the knobs to run the machine, you're bound to foul it up, because you don't know enough about what drives the whole thing in the first place. So, and I don't think a regents can do any better, because they're too far removed from that classroom to understand how to make it effective. And they don't seem to trust us that we have evaluation procedures. Let me close this by one final evidence of insensitivity to what this Madison campus is all about. From a system point of view. Recently in the paper, they published a list of PhD programs, graduate programs, that were going to be reviewed. And the inference was there's something wrong. Now, that conclusion was reached after having made a study of enrollment. How many people graduated? If you graduated fewer than 10 a year, I think it was, you were automatically looked at with some suspicion. By publishing that list, and there's a couple of options here. You could start from that point and go and investigate what this meant quietly and look at how we review programs on the campus, what's our performance, what's our track record of review. How many times do we make decisions of closing programs and opening programs based on these reviews? You know, do we actually monitor our own quality? The answer, of course, is yes, and extensively. But what happened instead, some person up there in system decided to release this to the press. It was almost like it was an intentional shockwave rather than a meaningful exercise. That came out in the paper. I start getting chairman descending on me. What's going on? I got a call. The chairman are getting calls. One of my programs in industrial engineering. We have a very fine faculty member out on leave at Stanford this year. he gets the word that the industrial engineering PhD program is under scrutiny and may be canceled. Mm-hmm. See, that newspaper story gets translated. He calls back home and says, "What's the story? I'm not coming back in the fall if this thing's gonna if this is gonna happen." Mm-hmm. We just recruited a guy from Harvard, super faculty member. He came running into my office the next day after that article, and said, "I don't believe this." He said, "They do away with our PhD program. I won't have any grad students. I can't do that." Well, you see the. And this went a wave across the campus. Yeah. It really hinders our recruitment. It jeopardizes our best faculty. You know, and it's just absolutely ridiculous. It's a total lack of sensitivity to understanding what a research university is about and what's important. And I can't believe they did that to us.
Has anybody found out what happened up there?
Bernie Cohn's working on it, and the faculty are sending letters, you can't undo something like
no.
that. You can only prevent it from getting worse and yeah. hurting you. You can't undo it. The deed is done kind of thing. It's like a coup, you know. Yeah. Once the coup acts, it's happened, you know. So, but I can't tell, you know, it almost looks like it was a pot shot. Yeah. And it certainly didn't help systems relationship with our new chancellor. She was livid about it, as you can well imagine. So, I've been focusing on more negatives than positives maybe here. And then next interview, let's swing to all the positives.
Well, the positives show up in the newspapers.
That may be,
I think what people never do say in public is what really bothers them.
We're sort of the masters of our own fate, though. I mean, if we do a good job at the things that appear important to the public and to the legislature, I think we can avoid most of the criticisms. Mm. And that means cleaning up our act. I try to do that here. Some things take a long time to fix, because you can't be cruel. The system prevents us from being cruel, fortunately, with people and with uh-huh. with programs and so on. But we have to be honest about making sure that we're doing it well and effectively. Have I said enough about IRB?
it's very yes I. You have. Very interesting.
Yeah. He overworked himself like crazy. Just not delegating things. Mm-hmm. Feeling he was the only one that could do that. You know, and as a result, he really pushed himself. Okay. I got someone waiting for me.
Okay.
Well, good.
This is the second session of the nighttime interview with Dean Bollinger, and it's now the 25th of May.
Well, since we last met, there's been a lot of activity around here. We've got approval of our new electrical and chemical engineering building. We've got approval to build a $1 million facility out at Stoughton. We've got approval for the final remodeling and addition of the hydraulics. Now called the Water Science and Engineering Building. So it was a very active quarter in terms of dealing with State Building Commission and some of the legislators.
Were these in much in doubt?
No, they weren't in doubt. They were just, you know, in steps of approval. Mm-hmm. Probably the most humorous thing that happened to me was in the process of presenting the engineering, electrical and computer engineering addition to the building commission. The chairman of the commission said, or the acting chair of the meeting said, I wonder if we shouldn't reconsider this building proposal, because you'll recall none of us anticipated that the dean would raise the money within this year. And now that he has, the problem is we'll have to move forward with the building, and it's a little early. And I thought, oh no, you're not going to do this to me. I offered to raise $1 million. Yeah. You said raise two instead of one. So I went out and I raised the two, and then they said, gee, we didn't think you were going to do it that fast. Maybe we should cancel the project. That was basically...
I'd like to have seen the expressions.
Well, fortunately, I don't react to that kind of flamboyant statement.
Was this a joke?
I don't think so. That's what really took me back, was he wasn't kidding. He was serious. And fortunately, I don't let things ruffle me that quickly, or I might have said the wrong thing at the wrong time. But ultimately, honor and commitment prevailed, and they voted the project forward. So that was a moment of near despair. Some of the other plans that we've had in the works are coming to fruition. A major grant to create another center here from the government is hopefully going to be announced in another couple months. And those negotiations have gone really well. So the college has actually moved forward on its strategic plan very effectively. I've been really pleased with it. In terms of the Madison plan, I was hoping to get that one sheet that...
Well, really, all I meant is what,
so how I could take it point by point, yeah. You know, down the list. But let me give you just a little perspective. First of all, this college has been committed to minority education for a long time. My predecessor, Bob Marshall, mm-hmm. was one of the founders of the minority engineering program on a nationwide basis. Mm-hmm. He hired Willie Nunnery, and then subsequently Al Hampton. So we were into a Madison plan with an active part of our instructional budget being spent on minority students recruiting, guiding, tutoring, and mentoring mm-hmm. for 17 years. We started the summer program for minority students here. That's the one thing. We started the Minority Engineering Summer Program 17 years ago. I think this is our 18th this summer. We did that on money that we went out and raised the hard way, mm-hmm. you know, by asking for it and convincing people that it was a good investment. I frankly find it a little bit disturbing that this year those instructional monies which I have supporting my minority program have been changed to a new number, which I will never be able to move in and out of again. In other words, they've been taken away from my regular budget and plunked down into a new budget with a new name on it, minorities program, okay?
Which is...
They didn't need to do that to get my commitment to a minority program. So I've lost flexibility. The second thing is... that I had made this commitment of our shrinking instructional budget, and I say shrinking because each year I've had a piece taken out of it, and this year I had another piece taken out of it to support the Madison plan. So my instructional budget was not only hit by what I already spent for minority program. Mm-hmm. But it has impacted how many courses I can offer and classes I can teach next fall by being removed from my budget, some $360,000. And I think that, speaking for a lot of my faculty, we're all very concerned about that, because we don't think that's the where the money should have come from, to support new ideas. There was no negotiation, there was no faculty governance involved. The money just disappeared in a line item on the new budget allocation. So I've
And this is at the Madison campus level. This
that's
is
correct.
Donna Shalane's.
Yeah, right. I wrote to the chancellor about that issue, and I got an answer back from administration about that I was okay, that nothing was a problem. So, but they don't have to schedule the sections that I have to schedule. So that took me back a little bit. And I think I reflect not just my own feeling, but the feeling of a lot of faculty. In terms of the Madison Plan curriculum requirement, I think our faculty is very concerned about the ethnic issues. I don't think that's a question. We want to do something. And we require in our engineering curriculum a whole sequence of courses that are electives in humanistic social background to help give our students a broad background in life and history and sociology and political science and so on. We like them to select those in some kind of a way that they form a pattern of understanding rather than throwing darts at a dartboard. There has been great pressure this year, this spring, to adopt policies on that curriculum, to adopt, say, a 3-credit required course of all students. As a representative, in a sense, of the chancellor here in the engineering college, I pushed that issue with the faculty. They have more or less revolted and said, curriculum is a matter for the faculty, and we are not going to rush into this thing of requiring a course in ethnic studies. And the reason is that we don't know yet what courses will be available. We don't know who's going to teach them. We don't know the content and how they'll fit into our curricular patterns. When I say we, I'm talking about at my last college faculty meeting, the arguments against moving forward with adopting this strategy. I got a cryptic letter from the vice chancellor's office that when will engineering get busy and get this thing passed? And I wrote him back a letter explaining that our commitment is definitely in the right direction, but when it comes to who teaches what and what's in the courses and which courses we require or accept, that's a matter that my faculty are not going to just walk into on the basis of an emotion. They'll treat this subject like they'll treat any other technical subject. What is the impact? How is it going to work? Where does it fit? And when we got all the pieces in the puzzle, then we'll vote on it. So we are not going to be able to say that this college is adopting the Madison Plan curriculum issues. We are not going to, I'm finding considerable resistance among a lot of our faculty on the concept of a center, of the ethnic center.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because as has happened in our society over the last decade, in many other areas, there are people who I think raise a legitimate question, is this not sort of a form of discrimination and won't it not propagate discrimination in many ways?
But that doesn't concern, why would that concern you, particularly the faculty, the center?
Well, because if our budget had not been hit, it might not concern them so much. But I think when I get $300 and some thousand dollars taken out of my budget, I turn around and I take it out of all the departments.
Yeah.
And now the departments can't do some things they wanted to do. So.
And you think some of that's going to the center?
I think, well, I don't know if it is or not, but the perception is if we lose money and some new things show up, our money made the thing show up.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, it's sort of a perceived channel. So I see on my engineering campus a certain amount of difficulty with the Madison plan as we see it. I'm confident it'll all work out.
Are you?
And things will go away. Some of these problems will go away because it'll sort of meld. The differences will meld I think we are hiring our first black faculty member this year. I haven't got it in writing from her, but we've worked on her for a very long time. This is a young woman who was one of the students through our summer program as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And she didn't come here to college. She went to Stanford. And she went to MIT, and she got her PhD from MIT this last year. And she was interested in coming back. I've pursued her since she was a grad student, the last 3 years. And we've kept tabs at her on her all these years, because she's a very talented young person. And so I went to the chancellor and said, I've got a young woman, electrical engineer minority, and she has a husband who's a very bright guy working at MIT in administration. He's a graduate of Harvard, and would you like to have him work for you? So Donna has offered him a job, and I've offered the wife a job. So we teamed up on that one. It looks like we're going to win. So
goodness, I think every college in the country would be vying for them.
Yeah, it was a tough one, and I know that I would not have hired her without the chancellor's help with her husband, because she has a lot of contacts in Washington and elsewhere that he was very impressed with, and I'm convinced that he is an important element in the decision for her to come here, maybe even more so than she is. So. I think that having the commitment that Donna has had to the minority program has been a big help in that respect, certainly. I find considerable resentment among some faculty with regard to the forced hiring of senior minority faculty. It's particularly serious, and I tend to lean with the faculty on this one, in my field, in engineering, because the number of these people are truly very small. Mm-hmm. And we have in our budget now, money taken away, put back in a position for a senior minority faculty member. And a carrot of another double of that amount if we can hire one. Well, those are meaningful financial incentives, right? And certainly financial incentives, the old carrot and stick routine, they have their influence. But they don't always work too well with faculty because they perceive that there are things that could have been done that would have been very good for the institution if we hadn't let that sit there, because we couldn't make it work. It was impossible. Or I've had some people tell me, look, if we steal a black faculty member from a small black college in the South, we're doing them a great disservice. They may want it. They may say, oh, wonderful, I can go to Wisconsin in a tenured position. And the thrill of doing that might, in some cases, make it happen. But I wonder sometimes how much good we've done. And now we are bringing in a minority faculty from small black colleges in the summer to work with our summer programs and things like that. So they get to work with us and they serve as mentors and so on. I found a certain amount of resistance to putting such an obvious, strong financial incentive that really costs us. It wasn't like it came from somewhere else. The faculty have an interesting attitude about budgets and positions. The idea is that we'll if that comes from someplace else and doesn't affect what I can do because I want to do it, then I'll go along with helping to make this happen. But the minute there's any kind of choice, then their own interests of the mission of the university, of research in the field, teaching in the field, that takes predominance over everything else. And in fact, it might even become further than that to self-serving, that they want to be the greatest in a given field, so they need to hire this person. And that is much more important, because I think the faculty perceive the university as a place where we create research results and educated people. And a lot of people are telling me that to change society and its attitude towards minorities is somebody else's job. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's not in our mission statement.
I'm just fascinated that your faculty is actually resisting this, that you're not going to approve it, at least not for the time being.
I think they will approve it. Like I said, I think they will approve it when they see on the table what the courses that we can integrate into our requirements are, and that they fit well.
What if they don't?
If they don't, they won't do it. I remember one of the comments at the last faculty meeting when we discussed it at length said, we are not going to have our students take a course in African reading if it doesn't fit into what we're trying to tell our students. And there was one course that's on the books in LNS that I can't remember the title of it, but they were picking on it rather seriously. So I think we need to have a clear plan of what those courses will be before we can expect this faculty to say something about it. Most of what's in the Madison plan we have done for years in this college, and very actively.
Yes,
that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
Financial aids, we've raised millions of dollars for minority kids, from corporations. Recruiting, we're recruiting all the time, and I've been after my first black faculty member for 7 years, and actively the last 2.5, mm-hmm. and I'm going to win. Reaching out, we've had links with other colleges, some of our faculty spending summers or months down in Tuskegee College and others, and bringing them up here. We have one visiting black professor from Nigeria coming this fall for a year. Those links have always been present, and we continue them. Faculty and staff, the hiring 70 minority female and male faculty, we are seeing an increase in the number of women available in engineering. I hired one 2 years ago, one a year ago, one in January, two if this woman takes the job with us. It'll be two this year. And I have an offer out to a third one, but I can't find a job for her husband, so I may lose that one. But she wants to come here. And there's one offer out to a chem engineering. If I find a job for her husband, she'll come. So I think our commitment to the hiring of women has been there a long time. And as the number increases in our population, we'll be able to bring some very talented young women here to teach in engineering. And we'll have 4 or 5 on the faculty by the end of next year.
But that's not part of the minority plan.
Well, that's in the Madison plan.
The Madison plan.
That's in part of it's the Madison plan. I'm sorry, it's the minority female, so I'll have one of those.
Yeah.
And but if we spend 70 positions in the university, I might get one. That's a bad ratio, you see. I am not going to be able to meet my requirements. If I can only hire and hire a minority, I can't teach my courses because there's just nobody out there for me to hire. So if we use up all our positions, if we only get 70, okay, then this will screw up everything. Hiring or promoting 125 minority academic staff members and opening recruiting for 25 classified positions. I'm trying to reduce my classified and academic staff positions, not increase them. I can't afford the number of bodies that I have here now. I need to take people out of certain kinds of classifications of jobs and put them into new jobs because the needs are changing. Mm-hmm. This adds another dimension onto my having to do that and will hamper that restructuring. Mm-hmm. From a mechanics point of view, this causes me a lot of trouble.
So what do they say up in Bascom when you just raise that
I haven't
point?
Been very vocal on it. I'm just going to make it work the best I can. I've got other things to worry about. You know, if this is going to be the theme of the campus and I'm going to be here, why, I'm going to have to fit the theme, I guess. But I it's caused me a good deal of difficulty. The curriculum enhancement issues, the creation of a multidisciplinary course around the theme of understanding other cultures, I think is great, but that's not going to be available till 89. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If that were available now or next fall so we could look at it, then I'd feel much better about it. But that's going to take a long time and resources, because LNS isn't going to just take their resources and put them into doing this instead of something they want to do. Mm-hmm. They're going to ask for new resources, and we're going to pay for it, all the rest of us. See?
Do you talk about this among each other, you deans?
A little bit.
I mean, you must be somewhat in competition on it, because there's a quota, and if one of you can't fill it, the other one has to. How do you handle that?
Well, I don't have anything to say about it. I mean, I'll do my best to get my people in those places, and I won't be successful as other people. And hopefully someone above me will be rational about it and allocate it fairly so that we don't end up with a university of a lot of people from a minority field, that a lot of minority people in one area or a group of areas that are way biased, and nobody in all the rest. And that's a judgment upstairs that has to be taken. The minority retention issue is a tough one. We've dealt with it for years since we had so many students and had to cut our enrollments. We cut our enrollments tremendously.
Yeah.
And that hurt our recruiting, but it also hurt our retention because there were a lot of our minority students who fell in that sort of never-never land that didn't get admitted. And I personally feel that the worst thing you can do for a young minority person is bring them to the campus and have them fail. I think not bringing them is better than the bringing them and fail.
Mm-hmm.
So our program is aimed at, if we bring somebody here on a scholarship or whatever as a minority student to enter engineering, we are going to break our backs to get them a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to ask any sympathy for grading or any of the same standards, but we're going to help that person meet those standards. And that's what our program's trying to do. And that's tough, because a lot of these young people just don't have the background. They didn't have the math or the physics or chemistry. So it's been tough. The multicultural center I've already dealt with. I don't know what the details are going to be on that. I haven't followed it closely. I'm not sure what a multicultural. I thought the whole world was a multicultural center.
You're a little skeptical about all this, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I am this week. I am this week. Partnership with Madison Schools. We've been involved with that for a long time.
Well, I don't know that you need to go into those lesser matters.
Yeah, the host family project, that's kind of interesting. And I think that might help. And our faculty, I think, have been very responsive. I've talked to quite a few who have signed up as mentors.
Mm.
And that's a good sign. So, I think that things are going reasonably well.
Well, how big a problem for you is recruiting good top flight people to come here?
We worked very hard at it.
There was an article about it actually a few years ago saying that it was in Science magazine about the great difficulty of getting well-qualified engineers.
Well, there's a shortage of engineering faculty on a nationwide basis. And we go after what I consider the very most promising. We have out of the 20 new faculty we've hired recently, 9 of them have Presidential Young Investigator Awards from the National Science Foundation. Mm-hmm. That's very prestigious. So that means that we are being very selective. Mm-hmm. And to have 9 at one institution from one college is pretty special. We put in 18 applications last year for our faculty. So we work at it real hard.
Mm-hmm.
The competition between my own departments to find good people is very high, because I take all the positions away when someone retires.
Mm-hmm.
And then they compete again in certain technologies that we've set up as our strategic plan. And the ones that come in with the best people first, we fill. So if you are slow in responding, your department shrinks.
Mm-hmm.
So weak departments will get weaker unless we do something unique about it. And hopefully faculty governance will help people realize that if they're going to be at the forefront, then they're going to work at it, or they're not going to be there.
Do you make an effort, since you do to some extent control the positions, to get people in fields that are not as mainline but are going to be important in the future?
Sure.
I mean,
and through the DIN process, the only way we get new positions, there are only 2 ways we've got new positions since I've been dean. We never get positions to ask to do more of the same. That doesn't happen. We get positions because we put in DINs on new ideas, like ceramics, biotechnology, new technologies that we want to get into. And we've got some funding that way. And the other is, the legislature simply said, we want more professors teaching in the classroom, and gave the university all these positions for quality of instruction, enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
But I've lost as many positions in the last 2 years, and during the biennium, I lost as many positions as I got. So I'm right back at ground zero. It hasn't done any good, because there's always this restructuring. And so each year I would get a new budget with new positions, but I'd have 4 old ones taken out, or 3 old ones taken out, and the new ones, and then old ones. And
is this happening to the others?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, isn't it more difficult in engineering than in any other field to get
top quality? I don't think it's fair to say that. I think no matter what field you're in, to get good people, you got to work hard at it. You have to nurture them, get to know their professors, their supervisors.
But I mean, other people don't have to compete with industry.
Oh, I see your point. Yeah. I guess I take a little different attitude about the industry issue. There's not really as much competition between academia and industry as one thinks. Because a person getting a PhD and going on in their career doesn't look, most of them, I don't think, look at a job comparing academic, the academic world with industry. It's what you want to do. They're so different. Mm-hmm. The people that we've made offers to that, I remember there's one this year that we really would have loved to have had from MIT. Super guy. He chose to go with Bell Labs. And when we talked to him, he was really down to Wisconsin versus Bell Labs. And I say we weren't really competing with Bell Labs because he decided that he wanted to get industrial experience. He's going to be in academia someday. Mm-hmm. And my answer to him was, that's terrific. We want you out there, and then 3 years from now, when you think twice about academia, then you give us a call and we'll make you another offer for more money. So we aren't competing. It's a question. If a person really in their heart wants to go that industrial route, they should do it. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't stay in academia. So it's two separate routes, and there's a lot of crossing between them. We're hiring, the last couple of years, many people that went to industry 4 or 5 years ago. About a third of our hires, third to half of our hires, are coming from industry that made that decision 3 to 5 years earlier. And now they've got that experience. Now they say, I want to go into the academic environment for a while. So I think it's healthy. It's much healthier.
So this isn't a major problem for you,
then? No. The problem is finding the right people for the right areas, because the competition between us universities for these people is very tough. Mm. And hiring an assistant professor today in engineering, you can't even talk to good people for less than $42,000, when on the rest of the campus we're talking in the mid-20s up. And our starting is 42. Mm-hmm. This is really taking a bite out of our budget, obviously, because people are so much more expensive than they used to be, relative to the rest of the campus.
Yeah.
Not only the 42,000, but almost invariably, I have to come up somehow with between $50,000 and $100,000 as we have a term for it, startup package.
Oh, yes. Equipment.
And they come on campus and interview. I interviewed a fellow today. What's your policy on startup packages? It's just a common question. You know, what can I expect to get going when I get here? Now, you know, when I started as a faculty member, I must sound like an old crotchety, but when I started, it wasn't what you're going to do for me, it's what I could do for you, you know. Times have changed. So that's been very costly. And we usually combine WRF money with industry money, and then if some people have some contracts, well, we can get them involved in the contract. So we can put together a package of $50,000, $100,000 to get people. Smaller schools can't touch that. That's why Platteville and Milwaukee will never be able to hire the same kind of people, because they haven't got those resources. And so there's the distinction today in engineering between the haves and the have-not institutions is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We've been talking at some of the meetings in Washington, we've been talking about that issue. And some people's attitude is it's foolish to take government money and try to level it out, because that's self-defeating. but there is a very big distinction today between the resources of an undergraduate teaching institution and a major research institution. I expect that's the same in other areas too. No, in terms of our new chancellor, I've gotten along very well with Donna, and I think she's a breath of fresh air on the campus, personally. I really like to see the enthusiasm and the drive. I guess what I do hope is that she doesn't get herself in trouble with the faculty. I'm sort of trapped in the middle, you know, as a dean, you work for the chancellor's my boss, and yet I represent the faculty.
Yeah. Are you in a little trouble on the subject of faculty governance yourself?
Oh, I push. I go by the rules and by the book, and I know the book better than the faculty do, but I push, yeah.
How many of your faculty are interested in faculty governance?
That is, I've been thinking about this subject quite a bit. I have found, and this is, I think I can even quantify it. It's not just qualitative. Over the last 5 years, I've tried to provide a lot of leadership to the college. And I set up teams to do things and so on. I have found in the course of those last 5 years, less and less output from committee structures. Committee structures.
Uh-huh.
We have a whole structure of standing committees in the college and ad hoc committees and so on. Ad hoc committees are pretty effective because you set one up and you get there's a date and a subject and the answer you want. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. They take care of it and they disband. The standing committees in this college have been less and less active. The more leadership that I provide, that my chairman provide, and that my deans provide, in terms of generating focus and getting things done, the less the faculty bother with it. And that concerns me. Mm. Now, we haven't had a faculty meeting with a raucous debate for 10 years that I can remember. Back in the 60s and 70s, I can remember faculty meetings where people were haggling for hours over issues. There hasn't been one of those in this college since 7 or 8, 10 years. That's not
and
one
that's
memorable.
You're...
I don't know. I think it's because we have a fairly effective organization. The faculty seem to have taken the attitude that, well, the dean will take care of it. You know, one of the deans will take care of it. And the only time that I've got a couple of faculty who, when I take an action, will try to take a swing at it. If they see anything, this is a faculty government. For example, the Madison Pen. We have a committee on academic programs. To college committee. Each department has a curriculum committee. Mm-hmm. In March, I gave him the Madison plan. And I said, the college has been asked to adopt the policy. And LNS has, in the meantime, adopted one. Okay. So we talked about it at the last faculty meeting in our college committee on academic programs, presented a statement. The statement was, we need to study it some more, okay?
Uh-huh.
Then we discussed it at my academic planning council, and I didn't happen to be at the meeting. So they deferred it to the next meeting, okay? Then when our agenda came out for the May meeting, it didn't have anything on the Madison plan on it because it was deferred. So I sent a memo out a week ago, Monday morning, I sent a memo out, referenced the Madison Plan college policy. And in it, I reworded to fit us, the LNS plan that was adopted, okay? Mm-hmm. And I said, this is a motion which will be made in the subject of other business at the May faculty meeting. Now, we have a rule that we don't take action on things that haven't been discussed at prior meetings. That's a rule in the mm-hmm. college governance. I pointed out that this was discussed in the April meeting, that the committee had made their report and deferred it, and this motion will be made at the May meeting. So I circumvented the Academic Programs Committee of the college, the Academic Planning Council, and went right to the faculty with a motion. Now, I didn't make the motion, I can't. But I had three or four people lined up to make the motion and argue for it, okay? Yes. And it got deferred. Because I can't vote for them, right?
You'd have liked to have it settled.
Certainly. I think it was a perfectly rational statement. It was a wonderful statement. It was a statement within the LNS people thought of it. And it's a statement that you could, and they adopted it. You could fit anything you want to into it, and it sounds good.
So this
is the engineers are much too, you know, much too detailists to accept that kind of a thing.
And they were, what are we getting into? Rebelling at you a bit.
Pardon?
And they were kind of, it was kind of a rebellion against.
Oh, I had a half a dozen phone calls. What's with faculty governance around this institution? Don't we have it anymore? And I said, if you come to the faculty meeting on the 18th, you'll get a chance to practice it.
Uh-huh.
See? And then they come up and said, geez, you know, we're not about to be pushed around by you or the chancellor's office. And I said, nobody's pushing you around. This is a motion that's going to be made by faculty at the faculty meeting. And you, if you're there, you can vote. Well, there's so many people away during holidays. I said, wait a minute. The faculty's appointment goes to the 22nd of May. And this meeting was scheduled that last September for the 18th of May. And if you don't show up and don't vote, you're not making your responsibility in faculty governance. I'm doing mine.
So they had to choose between vacation and faculty governance.
Well, doing something else in faculty governance. So, you know, these little things are sort of fun.
This is the end of the tape.
It has put, you know, in a document something people can refer to. And it has made a lot of people around the campus who don't pay much attention to it cognizant of it.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Okay.
I wish it hadn't cost me so much money, that's all.